Thank you so much for coming today. My name is Harry Mount, editor of the greatest magazine in the solar system, The Oldie, and I'm so sorry that some of you might have been delayed today by Mr. Trump's visit to London. Now, President Trump can try to close down London, but he will never close down the Oldie lunch. And there's a special treat for you today. You should find these slips of paper offering an exclusive offer to all of you here today at lunch to buy the perfect Christmas present, an incredibly cheap subscription to the Oldie, but the closing date is December the 13th. Now we've got three dazzling speakers today. We've also got the best MC in the business. He's worked with everyone from Max Miller to the two Ronnies, and he is in fact on the cover of the Oldie Christmas issue because among his many talents, he wrote three Morecambe and Wise Christmas specials. He is the one, the only, Mr. Barry Cryer.
Thank you, Harry. Welcome all. I've been asked to announce, actually, after the you've had your lunch and our authors and the book signing and everything, there will be a Brexit debate. This will last for 18 hours. And please inform your families if you're staying on for it. Right. We have a ritual at convention, the regulars here will know, before I introduce our authors, the parrot joke. And as I always say, if you're tempted to join in, please don't. It spoils it for the few who haven't heard it. Woman walked into a shop and saw a beautiful blue and gold parrot, and she said to the man, "He's gorgeous, how much?" He said, £20, £20. She said, £20? He's beautiful. He said, "Well, I've got to give you, he has form, he has history. He was in a brothel. And to put it delicately, he's got quite an extensive vocabulary." She thought, £20, I'll take a chance on that. Took it back to her flat and took the cover off. And the parrot looked round and said, "New place, very nice." And her two daughters walked in and the parrot said, "New place, new girls, very nice indeed." And her husband walked in and the parrot said, "Hello, Keith." Now, to business. Our first author tells us of the king of the world, Louis XIV, the Sun King. His saga is unfurled. From the day of his coronation in 1654 in Reims, he ruled the nation for 72 years till his life ended in Versailles. And now I must also end my verse, when I introduce our author. So I must cancel my poem and welcome Philip Mansell.
Thank you so much all for coming. Thank you for that incomparable introduction. I just want to remind you that Louis is one of us. He loved to eat and drink. Until the end of his life, he was having sort of 10-course meals regularly in public. He would drink as if he was behaving in a cabaret when he was among friends. He danced into his 60s, and he insisted on gambling going on. Maybe we can have a gambling session later. And he was the most universal patron of the arts in history. Music, plays, ballets, operas are still with us now, if any of you are lucky enough to go to Versailles, whether on almost every evening of the year. And it is, after the Forbidden City, the most visited palace in the world, with 7 million visitors a year. So for all the criticism he aroused, maybe he has the last laugh. They come for the gardens and for the Galerie des Glaces, probably the largest room in Europe, the only one where every fresco features the same dominating hero, Louis XIV himself. And he's more popular than ever. It's a showcase for French products, a location for state visits, and particularly under President Macron, an inspiration. The Fifth Republic, perhaps because it's a republican monarchy, is the most effective government France has had since Louis XIV, of whom its founder, President de Gaulle, was a particular admirer. In addition, Louis is one of us because he was a feminist. Exceptionally courteous to women. They had great political influence in his reign. He married for love Madame de Maintenon, who had probably more influence on French politics than any woman till today. And in 1673, published with his special approval, there was a treaty for the equality between the two sexes and the importance of removing prejudices. Above all, he is one of us because he was European and global as well as French. He wasn't just stuck in Paris and Versailles. He traveled all over France, from Dunkirk to Toulon and Nantes to Strasbourg. He acquired colonies all over the world, in India, Africa, Louisiana, probably the biggest land grab in the history of European imperialism. He tried to conquer Siam and convert China to Catholicism. He wrote to the King of Siam that Catholicism was the best, the truest religion, and above all, and this came from the heart, the one that taught subjects to be obedient to kings. And he was a European. He wasn't just ruler of France. He believed in the balance of power in Europe. He tried to preserve Poland and to keep France's oldest ally, the Muslim Ottoman Empire, strong in Europe. He put Spain before France with the War of the Spanish Succession. And partly because of him, his descendant, King Philip VI, is King of Spain today. And another descendant is Grand Duke of Luxembourg. So other dynasties have gone, but two Bourbons reign in Europe today. And above all, he's one of us because of his deep involvement with England. He had an agent in the golden days of King Charles II, Louise de Kerouac, Duchess of Portsmouth in England, and Duchesse d'Aubigny in France, and girlfriend of Charles II, and her apartment in Whitehall was the true center of government and where ministers met. And a London wit wrote on a placard outside her apartment, "Within this room, a bed's appointed for a French bitch and the Lord's anointed." And two Anglo-French world wars later, the world wars, friendly relations resumed after 1712. In his desire for peace, Louis said, referring to the Norman conquest and the mass migration from France, which is often ignored by English historians, he called France and England two nations descended from the same blood. And he said he would contribute to peace everything which will be possible to me. And he had a mole in England called the Abbé Gautier. You can read all about him in my book, who was the favorite drinking companion of the Prime Minister, Robert Harley. And he wrote that together France and England should give the law to Europe. And together they made peace with France while England was still officially on the side of the Netherlands and Austria. And Lord Bolingbroke, the Tory leader, the rival of Marlborough, who also made peace, was half French in culture, as was then extremely common, and indeed Giles is also. He lived half his life in France. He had a French wife, and it was said of him by the French foreign minister that with his excellent French, the court of France did not seem foreign to him, as he did not seem like a foreigner. We need more of him. And England was then an essential part of what was called the balance of Europe. Even then, there were plans for a united Europe with its capital in Utrecht, where peace was signed in 1713. Peace and calm in Christendom through an equal balance of power. England should be the protector of Europe. Prince showed an Englishman, a Frenchman, a Dutchman, and a Spaniard dancing together in Le Farandole Européen. Already there were dreams of a European army and a European parliament, and Louis XIV's secretary, Callière, wrote a manifesto for Europe. All the states of which Europe is composed have between them necessary liaisons and connections, which mean that one can regard them as members of one same republic. And it is almost impossible for a change to take place in any of its members without it troubling the repose of all the others. And after the peace of 1713, the English flooded back to Paris and Versailles. They left more admiring accounts of it than any other nation in Europe, as is shown. They proved their admiration by all the French furniture, pictures, tapestries, and so on, which are in all the museums and country houses of England. Versailles was called the most beautiful palace in Europe by Martin Lister. The Great Gallery was the noblest that I ever beheld in my life. And I would like to end with the words of the great Lord Chesterfield, the arbiter of taste in 18th century England. He wrote to his son that an hour observing Versailles was worth more than 3 hours in a closet with the best books. So even under Louis XIV, England and France cannot be understood without each other. Then and now, each was a natural model for and escape from the other. The channel unites as much as it divides, particularly in the age of Eurostar. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip.